Hey, welcome. My purpose here is going to be to contextualize vision, to make sure we understand each other when this word vision is used, in this knowledge track and in others. Apart from discussing essential principles, this is going to lead us to glance at the knowledge of ancient Greece, exploring the crucial concept of nous. And we'll also take a look at similar concepts in the Indian tradition, in particular the buddhi of the Sankhya system. So let's begin. First, knowledge is like love. You don't just want to read about it. One of the core premises of the Clairvision work is that secondhand knowledge, meaning knowledge gained from books or other people's accounts, is not what will bring transformation. Transformation comes from first-hand knowledge, knowing for yourself, seeing for yourself. In essence, this is what vision or clairvision is, the faculty that sees and knows reality, all levels of reality, from the material world to the high spiritual realms. All levels of reality, including yourself. What's the difference between vision and clairvision? In English, the word vision can be used in all sorts of contexts, such as physical vision, for example. But here, and in the knowledge tracks in general, vision is used in a way that's interchangeable with clairvision. Let me repeat this, so we establish it once and for all. No difference between vision and clairvision. Vision or clairvision is consciousness cognizing the creation. Consciousness cognizing the creation at all levels, including consciousness cognizing itself. This is what is meant when, at introductory levels, clairvision is described as the vision of the higher self. The higher self cognizing the creation, and the higher self knowing itself. And when speaking of clairvision as a vision of the heart, what is meant is that through vision comes the gradual realization of one's unity with the creation. This unity, which is the true foundation for heartness and love. In practice, vision is a whole spectrum of experiences, starting with very simple modalities, such as the etheric sensing, and going all the way to the highest level of nous, cosmic vision. The idea here is that there's a common principle behind all these experiences, from tuning into a piece of rock to watching the rise and fall of the entire creation. This common principle is vision. And the clairvision work is a systematic development of this vision principle. A vision including the whole spectrum, from gross to subtle, from material to spiritual, from the profane to the sacred. What's being described here very much overlaps with the Vedic concept of rishi. In the Indian tradition, the rishis were those sages who, among other things, wrote the hymns of the Rig Veda. What's the meaning of the word Rishi in Sanskrit, seer. Not a clairvoyant of sort, but a seer of reality. A seer as in vision or clairvision. Someone who can pierce through the veils of appearances and know reality at all levels. Here really, to see and to know are one and the same thing. A seer, Rishi in Sanskrit, is someone who cognizes and knows reality, not just someone who has nice visions. This can never be emphasized enough. Vision, as in the vision of the Vedic rishis, vision as in clairvision, isn't necessarily about visuals. There may be visuals as part of vision, or they may not. Think of vision as a global process of cognition, which includes a number of modalities, one of them being visuals. In experiences of vision, not all modalities are present at all times. We find an echo of this in the English language when we say, "Oh, I see." It doesn't refer to visuals. It means we get it. We understand. We comprehend the reality behind a particular set of facts. In vision, there definitely is this aspect of getting it. A noetic faculty at play. Comprehending, understanding, organizing reality into a mapped territory. Before moving on, let's stop and ponder on this. If you want to make sense of vision, one of the first things you have to do is to separate the concepts of vision and visuals. Remember, the Rig Veda isn't a collection of pretty pictures. It's made of hymns, said to describe high levels of reality. Vision is this force that's going to take you to experience of, oh, I see, at all levels of the creation. All levels from the material to the divine. Now, to another word for which a readjustment is needed. Knowledge. In English, there's often a tendency to equate knowledge with the material that you cram into your head, as in learning things by heart for an exam, for example. As such, knowledge can even be seen as opposed to intelligence and creativity. This is absolutely not the meaning of knowledge in Sanskrit. One of the main words for knowledge in Sanskrit is Veda, the same word as in Rig Veda. And this word Veda means knowing as in understanding, cognizing reality. Just as the hymns of the Rig Veda are traditionally regarded as cognition of reality at the highest level, not just nice pieces of poetry. Knowledge here means cognition, first-hand knowledge, knowledge acquired through vision. And we're not talking about a process where vision would come first and knowledge would follow. Vision and knowledge go hand in hand. To see is to know is to see. In a full experience of vision, there is knowing, a knowing that comprehends and embraces the object of vision. Here again, you need to stop and ponder on this different meaning of the word knowledge. It refers to a knowledge that's alive, a knowledge that lives in your vision, as opposed to second-hand knowledge. The fact that the same word knowledge is used for both should not fool you. Vision, as in vision knowledge, is a different category. And in the context of the clairvision work, whenever you hear knowledge, it should be completely clear that it is this living vision knowledge that is meant. In particular, just as the word vision must be stripped of any compulsory associations with visuals, so knowledge must be stripped of the sense of burden, sometimes associated with academic knowledge. Knowledge, as in vision or clairvision, is light, joyful. It's an endless string of, oh, I see, moments and realizations. It's a constant source of awe, as in the wonder of little children making discoveries about the world around them. This naturally leads us to discussing the Greek concept of nous. In English, the Greek word nous is often translated as intelligence. This is misleading, because intelligence is a word that usually refers to a faculty found in humans or in animals, whereas nous is primarily a cosmic principle. If the term intelligence were to be used for nous, then cosmic intelligence could be a better choice. Right away, it should be clear that human intelligence is but an individual reflection of the cosmic nous. But in reality, nous does not have an equivalent in English. It's one of those technical terms that are much better left untranslated. There are many words like this in Greek, as in Sanskrit, for which there is no equivalent in English, and which are therefore better left untranslated. Take the Sanskrit concept of karma, for example. In this meaning, karma doesn't just signify action. It implies a whole vision of cause and effect, the tracing of lines of destiny, and so on. Myriad associations and levels of meaning that are lost when the word is translated as action instead of being kept as is. Similarly, nous is much better kept as nous. And it's one of those terms that don't lend themselves to a discrete definition because they have multiple levels of meaning. If you've read Atlantean Secrets, you can more or less equate nous with the whole of Revelation Sky. Revelation Sky, both as an omniscient and a creative principle. really, Revelation Sky could just as well be called Noetic Sky. And if you wanted to explain Revelation Sky to a six-year-old, you could take the Noetic line and say, it's the place where you have, oh, I see, moments, all the time. The whole creation is in front of you. And wherever you look, you exclaim, oh, I see, because everything makes perfect sense. That would be the cosmic nous, vision from the standpoint of Revelation Sky. What's the difference between the words nous and noetic, by the way? There is really no difference in meaning. Nous is the noun, noetic the adjective. Noetic means having to do with nous. So nous and the noetic principle are one and the same thing. Speaking of a noetic function, for example, what's meant is nous in action, the noetic principle unfolding itself in a given situation. Now, two archetypes. The concept of nous is closely associated with that of archetype, as in Plato's theory of ideas, also translated as the theory of forms. We now use the term archetype because in modern languages the word idea has assumed a much broader meaning than the one used by Plato. So what are archetypes in the Platonic meaning? Archetypes are the blueprints of manifested things. Here we have a cosmological vision, which suggests that upstream of manifestation there exists a realm of pure blueprints. The manifested objects are material, their blueprints or archetypes are not. Archetypes are spiritual forms, which must exist before the corresponding material forms can be manifested. This suggests a chain of emanation. First archetypes, then material forms. Archetypes are packed seeds, out of which all things material emerge into existence. So here is another level of meaning of nous. Nous is this function of consciousness that links two archetypes. Faced with a particular object in the material world, nous is the function that can get you to see the archetype or the cluster of archetypes that stand behind an object. I say behind, but really upstream would be a more accurate term. Upstream and downstream are cosmological concepts referring to a chain of emanation. Upstream is what comes before in the chain of emanation. Downstream is the effect or product of what is upstream. If you've practiced Isis, the word that should come to mind here is sourcing. Isis stands for inner space, interactive, sourcing, in which sourcing means starting from emotions and uncovering the samskaric seeds behind them. This means going from effect to cause, from downstream manifestation to upstream realities. This sourcing is a noetic function. But sourcing isn't a concept that applies only to emotions. The Platonic vision is that all material things and phenomena can be sourced to archetypal levels. And nous is this function through which the sourcing takes place. Time to remember the key clairvision concept, often mentioned in the Katies, of peeling off appearances to uncover reality. This is what vision is about, and it's essentially what nous does. Back to archetypes. The term blueprint is often used for archetypes. And fair enough, when putting vision on an archetype, there very much is the sense of a blueprint. But an equally appropriate term would be instruction notice. The archetype contains all there is to know about an object in packed format. So the vision of archetypes isn't just some contemplative pastime, but the cognition of packed information, the highest possible level of knowledge and intelligence. A vision from inside, sourcing things to their highest essence. Take, for example, the traditional Indian way of explaining how the knowledge of Ayurveda was formulated. Not through empirical knowledge, but through vision. The Vedic rishis tuned into plants and various substances and intuited their properties. Sometimes it is said that these rishis cognized the devta level behind the plants and substances. Devta level, that's the upstream level in revelation sky, the sky of archetypes, the level where all instruction notices are found. Hence the word revelation in revelation sky, that level where the essential nature of things and all information about them is revealed to your vision. Incidentally, if you were trying to explain revelation sky to, say, a 10-year-old now, this would be a great line. It's the instruction notice. It's where the instruction notice is found. The instruction notice for what? For all things, without exception, including the instruction notice for the instruction notice, which comes pretty close to what people call God, capital G. Nous, in its global form, is celebrated as divinity in the Corpus Hermeticum. The Corpus Hermeticum is a collection of Greek texts dating from the 2nd and 3rd centuries CE. Some parts no longer exist in Greek and are available only in Latin. What is the essential topic of the Corpus Hermeticum? Nous. Corpus Hermeticum is a glorification of nous in its various forms, including the ultimate, which in the Corpus Hermeticum isn't just seen as some abstract principle, but also as divinity. Divinity with a capital D. The one God. The divine as intelligence, the divine as nous, for which the name Thought and Hermes are used. Here this is not Hermes, the messenger of the gods, but Thought Hermes. The divine as cosmic nous. And it is from this Hermes that the name Corpus Hermeticum is derived. Since the name Hermes and nous are one and the same thing, the name Noetic Corpus could just as well have been used. In the cosmology of Atlantean secrets, this divine nous would be the totality of revelation sky. Revelation sky seen as one single intelligent consciousness, which emanates and permeates the entirety of the creation. Let me repeat this. Nous as the one single intelligent consciousness, which emanates and permeates the entire creation. Where does vision fit in relation to this divine nous? At its highest level, vision means participating in the all-knowing consciousness of the divine nous. And as we'll soon see, this is actually a model with very practical applications. Among other things, it suggests that vision is pre-existing. Vision at all levels. You don't have to do vision. You just have to become aligned with it. Let's continue this contextualization of vision with a few glimpses of the Indian system of Samkhya. You'll often hear Samkhya spoken of as one of the six darshan, the six systems of Indian philosophy. This is true, but it doesn't pass the fact that among the six darshan, Samkhya has held a far more influential position than any of the other systems. Some have even said, Samkhya is not one of the systems of Indian philosophy. Samkhya is the philosophy of India. So when it comes to understanding Indian systems of meditation, it's wise to start with Samkhya. Samkhya describes reality in terms of tattvas, or principles. The most common set includes 25 tattvas, 25 principles. So for example, among these 25 tattvas, one finds the five elements, the five Mahabhutas in Sanskrit, earth, water, fire, wind, and akash, meaning space. Each of these is one of the tattvas of Samkhya. Creation in the vision of Samkhya is a process of emanation. Out of one tattva comes another tattva, and so on until the entire creation is in place. For the purpose of our present discussion, we'll focus on the upstream tattvas. During a cosmic night, when everything is in a state of dissolution, the only tattva is prakriti, unmanifested, totally unshaped. A principle where everything lies in a state of potential, undifferentiated potential. Then, when the process of creation begins, one tattva emanates out of prakriti. This first emanated tattva is called buddhi, a term which is the closest Sanskrit equivalent to the Greek word nous. I often joke that if you're looking for a word to translate buddhi into English, nous is by far your best choice. Like nous, buddhi is often translated in English as intelligence or intellect. And exactly as with nous, this translation is very much misleading because it tends to limit buddhi to the mental faculties of human and animals, when in reality it refers to a cosmic principle. Note that there are other situations in Sanskrit and in modern Indian languages where the term buddhi means intelligence, very much as in English. But for buddhi, the first emanated principle of Sankhya, intelligence is too limited a term. Buddhi, when it emanates out of prakriti, is the primordial spark of creative intelligence out of which all things will be manifested. In Sankhya, buddhi is also called Mahat, meaning the great principle. An appropriate term, since everything else, the entire creation, is going to come out of it. Out of buddhi comes the Ahankar Tattva, principle of individuation and separation. Out of the Ahankar Tattva, another principle emanates, and another. And as we saw before, tattvas keep coming out of tattvas until the whole creation is in place. Here is not the place to go into the details of this unfolding, but one concept that's relevant to our present discussion is the theory of Satkaryavada. Satkaryavada, or pre-existence of the effect in the cause. In essence, what Satkaryavada says is very simple. From one tattva to the next, the relationship is similar to that between milk and curd. Tattva 1, milk. Tattva 2, curd. When tattva 2 is produced, it's not like it comes out of nowhere. There's nothing in the curd that wasn't already in the milk. In the mechanics of Sankhya, tattva 2 was already contained or pre-existing in tattva 1. Tattva 2 isn't just a product of tattva 1. It's a transformation of tattva 1. Exactly like curd is a transformation of milk. The Sanskrit word is parinam, and it has both meanings, product and transformation. Tattva 2 is a transformed, a modified tattva 1, just like curd is modified milk. This leads to a conclusion that the people who wrote the Corpus Hermeticum would have been very comfortable with. Everything in the creation, everything, is but modified buddhi. This Mahat, this great principle of Sankhya, this buddhi or nous, isn't just something that runs through the creation. It is the creation. It's both the source and the very stuff of the creation. Putting vision on a tree, you could be tempted to think of it as something material, inside which an intelligence can be found. For example, the subtle principles that keep the tree alive and guide the modus operandi of material chemistry. But the model of Sankhya turns this upside down. The tree really is a crystallization of buddhi. Seeing buddhi in the tree is but a lower level of vision. At a higher level, the tree is inside buddhi, rather than buddhi inside the tree. In this vision, the entire creation is revealed as a sea of intelligence, in which objects crystallize here and there. Wherever you look, there is only buddhi, shaped in the objects of the material world. Incidentally, if we were to write this in Greek, there is nous in all things, and all things are nous. The sentence would fit very naturally in just about any of the texts of the Corpus Hermeticum and its related literature. Now, let's leave Samkhya here and after this brief cosmological survey, draw a few conclusions regarding the clairvision work and practices. Let's start with the noetic thread that underlies all modalities of perception. It's one of the most important things to understand about this work. Even though you may not recognize it at first, whenever one of the techniques of perception is engaged, so is one modality of nous or another. In the buzzing forest, you've practiced vision in the form of etheric sensing. Now, in the knowledge tracks at the foothills of the great mountain, there's going to be a lot of work on the luminous ether quality, which is revealed through candle gazing and which ignites powerful third eye forces of vision. Even though these various practices and modalities appear quite different, it is your task to gradually realize the noetic thread that runs through all of them. Let me repeat this. Realize the noetic thread that runs through all the practices. Clairvision work is a noetic blossoming. To take another milky analogy, through all the techniques of the clairvision work, you churn consciousness as one churns milk. And what is to emerge out of this churning? Nous, the cream of noetic enlightenment. Just as in Hindu mythology, the nectar of immortality came out of the churning of the primordial ocean, so you can think of all the facets of your own being as one great ocean that is going to be churned through the work. And what is to emerge? Nous, as the structuring principle of immortality. I purposely take this very general image of churning the ocean of your own nature to make it clear that the emergence of nous is a gradual process. It's not like saying that from now on you are to actively be looking for nous, as in the dimension of knowing in every exercise of the clairvision work. Rather, it's about letting nous emerge. We're talking about a gradual, progressive realization through which nous, noetic vision, is going to emerge in your life as the one consciousness that unites all the facets of your being. Next, to a very practical point resulting from our cosmological musings about nous. Vision is not an added value. Vision doesn't have to be developed the same way as personal effort is involved when toiling to develop a muscle. Nous is everywhere, all the time. Vision is pre-existing. This leads us to the concept of changing standpoint. In order to engage vision, changing standpoint means resting on something else than the ordinary mental consciousness, or OMC. Don't try to force vision into your OMC. The OMC is blind, more or less by definition. So, find another standpoint, meaning some other aspect of consciousness. Open to some other part of yourself in which vision is already unfolding. In the beginning, this is likely to feel like letting go, opening to a subliminal part of yourself, rather than making a conscious effort. Then as you progress, it becomes possible to become attuned to greater levels of consciousness. The art, then, is to let these modalities of consciousness see through you, rather than trying to see all by yourself. Let a greater consciousness see through you. This often comes with the very tangible experience of resting on something above your head, something that's bigger than you, and something that often feels impersonal, rather than resting on the personal consciousness of your OMC. And this is exactly what is meant by changing standpoint. Two types of modus operandi are possible here. One, you become attuned to a greater consciousness and find a flow of vision that's already engaged in that consciousness. In other words, see through the eyes of the connection. Let the vision of the greater consciousness flow through you. There's virtually no doing here. You are being passively transpersonal. The other experience is one where, instead of resting on the consciousness inside your head, you rest on some higher level of horizontality, as in a node above your head, for example, or some other horizontal layer which will often be felt above the head. There's no limit as to how high you can go. And from there you activate seeingness, just as you would do it with your third eye. Same sense of activation, and essentially the same seeingness, except that the function is activated from a higher layer rather than from your own third eye tunnel. Here there is some form of doing, but if implemented from high enough, the doing happens from a structure that is greater and beyond your own subtle bodies. This qualifies as transpersonal too, a transpersonal doing. With all things transpersonal, remember this principle. When it comes to doing, less is more. If you're being passively transpersonal, letting a greater consciousness flow through you, then the more you get out of the way, the better. And if you're actively implementing vision from a transpersonal standpoint, then the best result will come from simply activating a precise, tiny switch, rather than doing with the sense of effort, as in the things we do down here. Another thing to remember is that changing standpoint is often much less difficult than it sounds. It has a lot to do with remembering that, at all times, there are infinities upon infinities above your head, and that these infinities are just waiting for you to rest on them. A few words about subtle bodies here. It's when subtle bodies are being exercised that they crystallize, meaning go from amorphous and apathetic to awakened and functional vehicles. Hence the concept of subtle bodybuilding. By activating a whole range of subtle functionality, all experiences of vision result in subtle bodybuilding. But even more so of experiences that involve a change in standpoint. Higher standpoints are rich in structure and functionality. When you activate vision from there, your own subtle bodies resonate with higher structures and their modus operandi. Accelerated learning through mimesis takes place. In a second, your subtle bodies can get the hang of all sorts of mechanisms that would have been very difficult to figure out of nowhere. Of course, this works both ways. The more you cultivate subtle bodies through exercise such as your morning meditation, the more noetic experiences are likely to spark. Let me also briefly mention the technique of neti, washing the nostrils with isotonic salted water. Simple as it may be, neti is a mighty complement of a work on vision, with a dramatic awakening effect on the third eye tunnel and related circulations. This said, fascinatingly, as much as vision accelerates the building of subtle bodies, it's also a mighty force of deconstruction. Vision turns everything upside down. Really, you can circumnavigate the world and return with your MC intact. Not so of a journey into vision. In the OMC, we tend to live in a fabric of preconceived ideas, caged in our belief systems. Without even realizing it, we constantly project these preconceived ideas onto the world around us. As in the famous aphorism of Heraclitus, we don't live in the world, we live in our world, meaning our own projections. Vision is going to blow all this apart. As in this phrase, I like to repeat in the knowledge tracks, reality is way, way different from what we believe it to be at first. A world away from what appearances suggest. In the early stages of the work, you tend to think of deconstruction as the emotional work through which samskaric formations are undone. And that is deconstruction for sure. But it's only the beginning. The deconstruction brought about by vision, as in the noetic cognition of reality, reaches far deeper into our being. This requires a certain spirit of adventure. With the practices, the more you can engage the adventurous fiber inside yourself, the easier it will be to let go of baggage and jump into the fire of reality. In other words, embrace tiger return to mountain. If you want to speed up the emergence of vision, drop everything. When doing the exercises, cultivate a superior form of emptiness. Completely drop anything that has to do with the OMC. Just drop it. Make yourself vacant. And in the emptiness, let the great magic of vision dawn on you. Now, vision of the heart. Let's briefly return to the tattvas of Sankhya. In the emergence of the creation, at first, there is but the undifferentiated Prakriti. Then from Prakriti, Buddhi is produced. Buddhi, the great principle, which can be equated with nous. Then the next tattva to be emanated is Ahankar, principle of separation and individuation. Among other things, Ahankar is what creates the separative consciousness of the little ego. What this means is that Buddhi, or nous, stands upstream of separative consciousness. It was there before the seed for separative consciousness emerged, and it remains present throughout the creation, above and beyond separative consciousness. Nous really is a principle of unity. It's a thread that links all things and all beings, always. As such, it is the true foundation for heartness, love. Love is a manifestation of forces of unity. Love erases the hurdles that separate individuals. Nous provides the foundation for this. What this means in practice is that the more heart you bring into the work, and into your life really, the more you'll resonate with these core forces of unity that characterize noetic enlightenment. It's an invitation to engage heartness as a limit breaker, not just in human relationships, but also in vision at all levels. Engage heartness as a pathway to transcend the limitations of separative consciousness and become attuned to nous in its cosmic levels. As we come to the end of this talk, it's worth pondering on how vision is such a broad spectrum, from a wealth of little observations made in daily life, all the way to divine states of unity. And it's the same vision, the same nous, that runs through the whole spectrum. There's an invitation to be playful here, and not separate the material and the spiritual. As you're going to see, this KT includes exercises to engage vision in restaurants, supermarkets, put vision on people eating bad food. Use vision to decide if the cat is trying to trick you into giving her a second dinner, and so on. It's a characteristic of this work. Does not require that you give up curiosity and your inquiring tendencies in order to be spiritual. On the contrary, it invites you to be curious and constantly ask questions. Use vision to investigate the world around you. When we're little kids, we keep asking all sorts of questions. Then one of the reasons why it ends is that the OMC brings up all sorts of impasses. For the OMC, things are the way they are, and it tends to stop there, in the OMC. But with the emergence of vision, an entirely new field of observation opens up. Time to become like a little kid again, and start rediscovering the world. With vision, you can never ask too many questions. What's behind the feel of this tree? Why do land energies feel so different close to a volcano? Why do flying dreams feel so different from other dreams? When you ask questions like this from a space of vision, rather than from the OMC, entire worlds open. Completely new dimensions of understanding. Really, this work is for impolite children, who shamelessly keep asking all sorts of questions and who like to press every button, just to see what happens. This work opens the world as this big alchemy lab, waiting for you to experiment. And the beauty is that this vision, which you implement in small things of daily life, is in essence the very noetic force that ignites higher states of consciousness. vision really isn't some added value. Vision, as in nous, is at the very core of consciousness. And it's not just an individual modality, but a universal principle. Divine cosmic consciousness. Cultivating vision means nothing less than moving toward the source of all sources. In the words of the Emerald Tablet, the one power through which all things were made. So the big picture of the clairvision work is not that when you're enlightened, there will be vision. Vision is both the way and the goal. The work and the enlightenment. In all the practices of the clairvision work, vision is the thread that you follow and through which consciousness gradually enlarges itself into greater and greater noetic dimensions. All the way to Thought Hermes, which represents the one intelligence consciousness that not only permeates the entire creation, but is the very stuff of the creation. The principle of unity. The one consciousness that is the creation. Now, time to start with the practices.